I'm Annie Leonard with The Story of Stuff. Welcome to another episode of The Good Stuff, where we talk to people who are working on solutions to the take-make-waste system that's trashing the planet and threatening our health, our families, and our communities. As I've said before, at The Story of Stuff, we hear all the time from people who want to get involved in working for a cleaner, safer, and more just world, but they don't know how to get started. When it comes to issues of pollution, I think a lot of us are intimidated by all the science involved. How many parts per billion of some specific toxin will shorten our lives? How chemicals and household products harm babies still in the womb? How carbon in the atmosphere produces global warming? We may think our voice doesn't matter unless we're experts in things like neurotoxicity, endocrine disruption, bioaccumulation, or the greenhouse effect. Nothing could be further from the truth. Saving the planet and protecting our health is too important to be left to scientists, government regulators, or even professional activists like me. After all, it's the people whose lives and livelihoods are at risk who understand most deeply just how devastating pollution can be to a community. This story is about communities under assault by toxic chemicals. They couldn't afford to bring in sophisticated equipment to prove they were being poisoned. They got no help from the government, where the chemical industry holds too much influence. They got no help from the news media, who didn't want to upset their advertisers. So they took matters into their own hands, using equipment they already had, their own bodies. It's an inspiring story about ordinary people taking on giant multinational corporations. Let's learn more. Chennai is a large city on the eastern coast of India. The city and the surrounding region, stretching south to a city called Cuddalore, are home to an astounding number of chemical factories, emitting staggering amounts of toxic pollution. Shweta Narayan, who works with an organization called Community Environmental Monitoring, says that you can smell Chennai long before you enter the city. On her recent trip to the United States, I talked with Shweta about the health threats from the chemical factories and how local communities are working to document the problem and push for action.
For these communities, survival itself is a big challenge. And then on top of it, when they're being poisoned, when their health is being compromised, when the children are falling sick, to raise their voices or to need to get that support to strengthen their voices against these polluting facilities is a bigger challenge. So the idea of community environmental monitoring is to build capacity in these communities to enable them to monitor their environment, to develop data which can be easily understood by their community, and then based on that, demand action from the government.
So the local communities are actually doing the monitoring and data collection?
Yes.
Do they have to be trained in science? Did they go to college and study this?
No, you don't have to be trained in science. I mean, they have a rich experience of being poisoned. They live in those neighborhoods. They are watching the air. They know when the smoke comes out. They know when the effluent is being released. And this is an effort to demystify science. Science is not a technical mumbo-jumbo which only few people can understand. Unfortunately, it's been made out like that by scientists. But the value of local knowledge, the power of local knowledge, is what is emphasized upon in community environmental monitoring. So documenting your instances of pollution rather than just stories like there was a bad smell and I felt nauseous, instead of saying that, you scientifically or in a methodical manner, you document it saying, this is the date, this is the time, this was the wind direction, I got a rotten odor kind of odor, this is the suspected source of this odor, and my child was sick and I had to take my child to the hospital. Our bodies are our best equipment. What we smell, what we see, what we feel is our first line of assessment. And that helps us understand what kind of environment we are living in. And we don't need anything more than that. We don't need sophisticated technology. There is this community which is about 175 kilometers south of Chennai. It's called Cuddalore. Cuddalore in Tamil means a village by the sea. It used to be a very, very pristine area. It still is. Unfortunately, there are about 30 chemical industries that have been set up. One of the biggest problems in Cuddalore in terms of pollution is the noxious odors. So there are 31 industries, and every industry has a unique odor. So when in a chemical complex or in a residential area which has a lot of chemical industries, people are complaining about odors, that means these are gas leaks, basically, that's taking place. their complaints, the community's complaints, were not being taken seriously by the regulatory agencies. And that's a case normally around because either community knowledge is not respected, they were being considered as liars, or there were agencies who would say that, oh, these people are unhappy with the industries because they have not gotten jobs in the industry, so they're complaining. So in these circumstances, we started working with the community in building that knowledge, because anything more technical, was which the regulatory agencies are supposed to monitor or maintain, was not being shared by the community. And this was also an effort to develop their own experience into evidences. That's when we started figuring out as to what would be the best way of getting that information. One, accessing the existing information, but also the rich knowledge that people have in terms of being poisoned, how do you develop that for people to understand the extent of harm that was being caused? So the most natural thing that came to us, because of the odor and how prominent it was, and it's when I'm talking about odor, it's extremely noxious odor for me to work in the community, because I was from outside and had never seen something like this. It was very difficult, and I still cannot imagine how people can live over there. I've fainted a couple of times when I have been there because of the how intense the odorous emissions were. So we did a study for 14 weeks. And study in the sense that we organized ourselves, we said, okay, let's start documenting odors on specific locations within the neighborhood at specific times. So there is a systematic approach to documenting odors. And over 14 weeks, we documented about 283 incidents of odor. And out of which 256 incidents were extremely intense odors. Intense odors means like something that you're not able to breathe. Cuddalore is a remote place. Not many people know about it. But pollution-impacted communities or pollution-affected communities get around the world, I mean, despite all the limitations that we have, and bring up tools, develop tools to help each other. And so there is a group called Bucket Brigade in the U.S., and which has developed an air monitoring tool to help test for toxic chemicals in the air. And we reached out to them, sought their assistance in using that tool in Cuddalore to test for chemicals in the air. Now, it's not that it is quite expensive for us to use even the bucket as opposed to what is in the U.S. So we used it in a very, very limited fashion. And then we had these logs of over 14 weeks. So on one incident of an intense odor, we took samples and we sent it to the lab and we got it processed and we saw the results. And we managed to, so then we could say that if one incidence of this rotten egg odor had so many chemicals, we have been documenting this for 30 days. So we have 30 days of being exposed to these chemicals. Yes.
Were this level of emissions illegal?
Totally. And we don't even have, in India, we don't even have standards for toxic chemicals in the air. And some of the levels that we found, especially of cancer-causing chemicals, was 20 to 30,000 times above US EPA prescribed levels. So it was just unbelievable numbers that we were getting.
When you took it to the industries, what did they say?
Denied. They did not accept our report. They called us names. They threatened to sue us, to physically threaten us, and all sorts of. I mean, I think it is quite. They were on their defensive, and they said that they would come out with their study. They didn't believe us. They didn't believe our technology. They never came out with their study, but we got a leaked copy of their report. They found more chemicals than we did.
So these companies are huge Indian and multinational companies, like
yes.
Big, rich, powerful companies. Was it scary to go after them?
Yes and no. Yes, it was, because there were sometimes dangers of physically being harmed by them. We had people following us to our homes, but no, because on a larger level, they were engaged in something completely illegal. And it was, if we didn't raise the voice, it is the future of our children that is at stake. So we had to collectively do something about it.
So what about when you took this data to the government? What did the local environmental agency say about this data?
Again, that was the first response was denial and not believing us. And they commissioned their own study.
But, what did their study say?
No, before even coming to their study, it was an interesting process to monitor their scientists itself. So they commissioned it with a government agency which is known to ally with industry. So we didn't trust them. And it took this agency 2.5 years to compile the study, because every time they would come to the villages to do their sampling, they would have informed the industries, and industries would shut down. So, and this is again where community environmental monitoring comes into play. So villagers were aware that something is going on and there's a government study that is going on. So they started following the scientists. And they started recording conditions during the days when these equipments were supposedly recording or taking samples. So stuff like, you know what, the factories are not working today. There's no smell in the air. And you have located this equipment which is away from the industry. Just simple observations were being documented. And this is what we call, and we developed this as a pollution patrol. So we were in groups patrolling around, recording these conditions and sending letters at the end of the day to the agencies telling them, look, we are watching you. So it got very difficult for the scientists to fudge data or to come up with information on do testings on wrong days when you would not get anything in the air. And 2.5 years later, they did they released their report, and they said that based on the calculations of levels of chemicals in the air, the cancer risk in Cuddalore was 2,000 times above the national cancer risk. So we made them do a decent job.
Did that get a lot of media? That's pretty
extreme. It got a lot of media. It made the regulatory agencies come in and promise action. But most importantly, and that was our biggest victory, not this report, but the fact that everybody acknowledged that what local people had been saying all this while about pollution was true. And so for us, it was a victory in terms of reclaiming our dignity as a community. And then the local district administration constituted a committee and this is for the first time in a country that a committee to look into the problems of pollution and finding possible solution was set up, which had local villagers as members of committee. So which was, in a way stating that local people have the best information and knowledge and they should be acknowledged for that.
The people of Chennai and Cuddalore wanted to find out how much pollution was being emitted into the air they breathe. They got help from Global Community Monitor, a U.S. organization that pioneered the use of simple and affordable technology to measure chemicals in the air. Denny Larson is the head of Global Community Monitor.
We found a way for people to take air samples using a 5-gallon plastic bucket. So part of what we do is demystify the science that the academics and the polluters and the bureaucrats have managed to convince a lot of people, can't be done by common people. And that's just not true. Common people can learn how to take air samples, what that data means, and how they can use that as leverage to get companies who are polluting their air to clean up their act. We've actually trained communities in 27 countries and about 36 communities in the United States over the last 11 years to use the bucket and effectively get corporations and governments to be more accountable to people who live on the fence line of industrial facilities.
How do the corporations and government respond to this data? I can imagine there would be some skepticism when some community member comes up with this technical data.
Sure, and there almost seems like there's a playbook. It no matter whether we're in India or Indiana or if we're in Chicago or Chennai, it seems like they react the same way. So yeah, skepticism, how could ordinary community people take a sample that would be scientifically credible? But luckily we have all the backup for folks. We actually worked with the US EPA to certify the method years and years ago. So we have all this backup for people to show that, the sample was credible and scientifically accurate. In addition, though, they often fall into the trap that we invite them into, which is, well, if you don't believe us that it's so bad here on the fence line, then you bring whatever you use, a canister or high-tech piece of equipment, you bring it over to this person's home on the fence line, and you take a sample, and we'll take a sample with our bucket, and we'll compare and see what happens. And every time we've done that, the results of agencies using more sophisticated equipment is that the sample results are not only higher, but they're significantly higher, sometimes 10 to 1,000 times higher in those chemicals that we tracked in the bucket. And at that point, pretty much the debate is about data. It's not about being accused of being emotional, which a lot of times the agencies do, or not using fact. Now we're into a fact-finding mode where, because the citizens are actually generating their own data, they're driving that debate. No longer is the debate or the conversation being driven by bureaucrats and polluters who control the information. And that levels the playing field in a way that allows community members to make some significant headway. This is a story of a woman named Jackie who lived in a Buffalo, New York area. She was in the neighborhood of an industrial facility that makes a fuel, much like coal, called petroleum coke, out of the very bottom of the barrel of what's left after you process oil. So they make this coke, coal, and sell it to people to burn. She became ill about 15 years ago. Her immune system was depressed. She had a number of other symptoms that were quite worrisome, and she wondered whether the emissions from the facility, which often smelled extremely bad and caused acute or immediate effects, might be causing her problem. With the help of some groups, she contacted us at the Bucket Brigade, Global Community Monitor. We helped set them up with buckets so they could start testing around this company, Tonawanda Coke, it's called, a little area known as Tonawanda outside Buffalo. Those tests came back extremely high in benzene. Benzene is one of the worst known human carcinogens, causes cancer at very low levels of exposure. They used those bucket samples to go to the state of New York and ask the state of New York to place sophisticated monitors around Tonawanda Coke to determine how much benzene might be coming off and whether there was anything illegal going on. The state did that. They ran the monitors for a couple years, and in fact, they found much higher levels of benzene the Bucket Brigade had. And cancer assessment was done that showed that they were creating an excess cancer risk in the area that was deemed extreme. The Environmental Protection Agency went to the facility to investigate at the request of Jackie and others in the community, and they found a series of violations which seemed to be criminal. They brought a criminal case against the environmental manager and the company for violating the Clean Air Act and obstructing justice. And yesterday, in court in Buffalo, New York, the manager and the company were found guilty of violating the Clean Air Act, and the environmental manager faces a jail term of up to 75 years. Didn't happen overnight. It took 10 years, but it shows that ordinary people can take charge of the situation and make the government do its job and result in some very important, significant action that sends messages to a lot of companies out there who are probably doing the same thing.
So, Shweta, what advice do you have for anyone who lives in a community where they can smell this kind of pollution? They know it's there, but they don't know how to get started.
To ask the questions, the uncomfortable questions that nobody else does normally ask, and to get organized. I sincerely feel that every individual has the power to bring about a change, and it's just to realize that we have that power, and we are not alone in this. Kadlur is not a fight alone. Bhopal is not alone. You know, once we start asking those questions, we'll also get a lot of answers, and very positive ones. And I mean, in last 10 years of my engagement, we have gotten support from the most unexpected places. And it was only because we were talking about our problems at the same time we were sharing our problems with other people, other communities. And the solidarity, the support, the network that we have built globally is incredible.
So what kind of unexpected support have you seen? Are you talking about churches or businesses?
Businesses, churches. I mean, there have been people who, like locally in Kadlur, who have sympathized with the problem, have donated material, donated money, published reports on our behalf, a lot of things, a lot of things that goes on to build a campaign. You know, you need to put the message out. You need to, somebody who has hosted a website for us. We have gotten support from the most unexpected places. And it was only because we were talking about our problems at the same time we were sharing our problems with other people, other communities. And the solidarity, the support, the network that we have built globally is incredible.
Global Community Monitor has worked with dozens of communities, from the Cancer Alley chemical corridor along the U.S. Gulf Coast to South Africa, the Philippines, and Kazakhstan. If you're looking for help fighting air pollution in your community, you can find a link to them on our website, storyofstuff.org. What can we learn from these stories? It's that when people get together, we have real power. We don't have to sit back and hope that companies will come up with a solution to toxic pollution. We don't have to depend on scientists or government officials to tell us whether we're at risk. The issue is not how much pollution is safe for communities to be exposed to, but the right of communities not to be exposed at all. We already know toxic chemicals are harmful to our health. We know global warming is real. We know we're stressing the planet's biological systems. Now it's time for us all to stand up and demand change, just like Shweta is doing every day.
That's it for this episode of The Good Stuff. Our show comes to you from the studios of Youth Radio in Oakland, California. Our engineer is James Rollins. Post-production by Brandon McFarland. The Good Stuff is produced by Bill Walker. We'll have another show online in a few weeks. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends. Find us on Facebook and storyofstuff.org and keep working on the good stuff in your own community. Thanks for being part of the solution.